Good morning, this is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team of Prudential Now Realty, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how was Christmas?
Well, it was good, and I didn't wear my Green Bay hat, but prior to Christmas, what can I say
about my Packers?
Oh, that is... Did it end up in the toilet, or...?
No. The big win over Dallas?
Well, I'm sure I did like everybody else, and ate way too much, but it's definitely... The new year is just around the corner.
It is the season, Lance.
It was. It was the time of year to do it. And I kind of like to bulk up a little bit before I lose my weight. It makes me feel like I've lost more.
So there you go.
Well, that's one of the things that we're going to talk about today. As always, we've got in the studio with us our lending expert, Mr. Tom Coyne from Sterling. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. I had a great Christmas with the family. Love this time of year. And looking forward to next year.
You know, it's like that, and we always spend that time with the family and get to spend it a lot of times with family houses we had sold and helped people move into. So it's great we were able to get by and see a lot of those folks, and great to see them enjoying that purchase and using it for one of those biggest things, and that's family get-togethers. And so, but like you said, getting ready for next year, we always do a show at the end of the year and kind of talk about goal setting for next year. Some people might be setting that goal that they want to purchase a house in 2014. They want to make some changes in 2014. And kind of as we look towards that, how does that happen and what kind of leads people to make those choices? So I have a statistic and we did some little research, and there's been numerous studies that have shown only about 15% of our population actually have goals. I mean, is that crazy?
That's scary.
It is. And then what gets, as the statistics get worse, of that, only about a third of those folks actually write down their goals.
So this blows New Year's resolutions completely out of the water.
It does blow New Year's resolutions completely out of the water, unless you want to write that resolution down. We're going to talk about some of the ways that you can achieve some of those things that you say you want to do. And then studies have shown, though, that you are 90% more likely to achieve your goals or objectives if they are written down. And it's not even a question. I mean, it's not even in the ballpark. All of these studies have time and time again proven that. And sometimes that's the disconnect that we find with New Year's resolutions. So one of the things we do is we go through and we sit down with our team and our agents, and we make them do goals, write them down, turn them in their five areas of their life. And one of the things that we encourage people to do is really write down three goals in those five areas. And those are family, educational, personal, mental, spiritual, and then physical. They say the number one New Year's resolution to lose more weight. And the last one, financial. You know, do you want to purchase that new house? Do you want to refinance your loan? Do you want to increase your credit score? All of these things that we can talk about. But we encourage people to go through that process and write those down. By doing that, taking that resolution in those five categories and writing it down, you're going to increase your odds of making that happen by 90%.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it just really is broken down. It's kind of a no-brainer when you look at the studies and do it that way. And then a step further that we always go through with folks is we say, okay, now I have those goals, but were they good goals? Were they what we call SMART goals? And SMART ends up being an acronym that we use to decide, does the goal work? The first, the S, specific. The goal has to be specific. It can't be, I think I'm going to eat healthier. Well, how much? How many days a week? you know, And so that's the thing that happens is, am I going to eat healthier on Monday afternoon or all week? So the goal has to be specific to what you're trying. How many healthy meals? What will those meals look like? So within that, it needs to be specific. The M in SMART is measurable. If it's not measurable, we can't really be accountable to that goal. So we always write down, I don't want to run faster or lift more. How much more do I want to lift? Do I want to increase my weights by 10% across the board? Do I want to, you know, lower my average mile by 15 seconds? You have to have it be measurable. And then the A in SMART, attainable. Can it be done? I mean, I would love to. The Olympics are coming up, and I would love to participate in those.
Don't tell me you won't write that down as a goal.
Something tells me that's probably not gonna happen. So, is it attainable? You know, can it be done? And so that's one of the things to really look at, so that it's there. And that kind of goes along with the R in SMART, and that is realistic. Many times people try to bite off too large of a chunk at the New Year's resolution, try to do something too big, too fast, and a lot of times it's just not realistic. So is it realistic? Can you have small changes that over the next 90, 120, you know, 160 days is possible to achieve that goal? And then the last one, five, is and SMART, the T in SMART, once again, SMART goals, the T standing for timeline. Give yourself a deadline. We are naturally, as human beings, without a deadline, we'll just kind of wander around. So, that's why there's deadlines at work. That's why things have to be done by a certain date. And you have to do the same thing with your goals. You have to give yourself a timeline. Once again, that you can be accountable to. So, you know, it really starts with the written out plan, setting those goals in those five areas, and then making sure that they really follow the SMART plan of goal setting. And it just makes a huge, huge difference. We are going to talk a little bit, Tom. I know that you have certain criteria that you work with yearly, and we talk about the number of loans you do and stuff. Do you set goals like this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think if you don't set a goal, you're just kind of wandering around and just going through the motions. But I set a goal at the beginning of the year, and I sit down and talk about it, and I try to not just say, okay, here's my goal to close X amount of loans, but I also talk what specific actions am I going to do daily to meet that goal.
Yeah, no, that makes, and it really, when I review our numbers and where we're ending up for the year, you know, we set a goal at the beginning of the year to, you know, to help 150 families. And as we look at those numbers, and, you know, I pretty much know because there's one business day next week, you know, really before the end of the year,
right?
We pretty much know exactly we're going to be over the course of an entire year and all of those transactions, we are going to be within three transactions of that goal, actually over. And so it's crazy to think all of the things that, you know, that was written down at the beginning of the year, but all of the things that would have to line up to make that happen tend to happen once those have been written down.
Absolutely.
So, So it's an incredible experience. We're super excited about it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Tom a little bit more about what's going on with the lending industry as we wrap up the year, and a little bit of goal setting within his industry.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been looking about some trends and predictions for 2014, what some of the experts think are going to happen, and then kind of relating that back to our local community and what's going on here. We've also been talking a little bit about lending and interest rates, and Mr. Tom Coyne at Sterling. Tom, what's happening in your world? What do we need to know about?
Well, predicting right now that a lot of people out there are getting ready for tax season, and they're anxious to get their tax returns, and I thought I would tie that in with mortgage insurance. So we've talked a lot in the past about different ways people can pay mortgage insurance. We've also talked about in depth the different types of mortgage insurance requirements on various loan programs. However, we've never gone into too much depth about just what is mortgage insurance, seeing as how mortgage insurance is tax deductible and we're basically at that season. I wanted to go into it. So private mortgage insurance, or PMI, is insurance payable to a lender that may be required when you're taking out a mortgage loan. It is insurance to offset any losses in a case where a borrower is not able to repay the loan and the lender is not able to recover their costs after a foreclosure of that said mortgage property. So it's essentially a way to protect a lender from a borrower defaulting on their loan. The cost of this mortgage insurance is either paid monthly by the borrower, upfront by the borrower, or on some loan programs, it's paid both upfront and monthly. On most loans, mortgage insurance is only required when a borrower is not making a 20% down payment. That puts them at 80% loan to value. If someone doesn't have 20% down initially, but reach 80% loan to value over time by, say, paying down the loan and or their value of their home appreciating on the home, they do have the option to get rid of this mortgage insurance by requesting it be canceled by the lender. Now, most lenders will require a new appraisal to verify the home does indeed have 20% equity before they'll drop that mortgage insurance. Now, the cost of this mortgage insurance is really important. The cost of it to the borrower can vary on several different factors, which include loan to value, that is basically the balance divided by the sales price or the appraised value, the occupancy of the home, and what I mean by this is whether this is a primary residence, is it a second home, is it an investment property, but most of all, it varies due to credit score. A lower credit score generally means the higher the mortgage insurance rate. Now, you can look at mortgage insurance as a measure of risk. If someone has a low down payment and low credit scores, they'll be considered riskier than someone with, say, a large down payment and higher credit scores. Therefore, the more risk you pose, the higher the mortgage insurance will have to be to help mitigate that risk. For the borrower, there's really no benefit to paying mortgage insurance. Nobody likes it. It's just
right.
The reality of what people live with. So generally, the first-time home buyer, second-time home buyer, they expect to pay mortgage insurance. Generally, they won't have a large down payment to make. But it's the person who's maybe on their third or fourth home where they bought a house, they built up some equity, they sold, they applied it to a new house, that house has built some equity, they sell. Now by maybe the third house, they do have that 20% put down, and they're avoiding that mortgage insurance. Up to that point, though, there's no benefit to the client. It literally just protects the lender in case you default on the loan.
Gotcha. And a lot of times people, you know, they get that question. That's a great explanation of it and a good way to explain it, that the lender has more risk. If you've got 20% in the house, you're probably not going to risk losing that because
right.
You've saved that money, you've put that investment into the house. Where if you only have 2 or 3% in the house, you might just walk away.
Right.
And
absolutely.
It's not as big of a deal. And the lender can't recover their investment.
You know, in years past, you used to be able to get mortgage insurance on a second home or an investment property, but you can't now. You have to put 20% down to avoid mortgage insurance. Reason being, when so many homes were foreclosed over the last 5-10 years, people were foreclosing on their investment properties or their vacation home. If you're going to lose a house, are you going to lose the home that you live in where your kids sleep every night, or are you going to lose the vacation home where we're in Seaside?
Right. Yeah.
So
it's a pretty easy choice.
Second homes, investment properties, they're riskier. So again, it's all a measure of risk as far as calculating mortgage insurance.
Okay. Very good. That's a great explanation of that. And I like how you tied that into kind of being prepared for your taxes. One of the things is do not file away if you've got what's called that final HUD statement. So when your transaction is funded and recorded from the title company and from your real estate agent, you'll get a final HUD statement. And that itemizes all of the closing costs that were in there. And your accountant needs that to make sure they are taking full advantage of what they can to help you out when doing your taxes. So they're going to need that HUD statement. It looks like a big spreadsheet, and mm-hmm. It's usually the last page put into your packet. So if you have any, and it's easily obtainable from clients in the past. If you a simple call to the title company, we can usually get that. So if anybody has done a transaction like that and needs a copy of that, contact your agent or the title company
you work with, and they should be able to get you a copy of that. But a lot of that will be on there, and then your accountant will really appreciate you
having that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of benefits to buying a home and owning a home as far as taxes are concerned, so definitely have all your paperwork handy.
So we've been talking about predictions. What will be happening in 2014 and how things are happening? When I saw this next one, it was great because I could think of four different occasions when we were able to take advantage of the same type of thing. But the number four one that they wrote down was what's called one bigger happy family. So the homes that are going out to the market in 2014 will look a little different than what we've seen before. Many of the homes that are being built now are coming with two master bedrooms. So that, you know, parents with older children that maybe come back to the house briefly or grandparents can live under one roof. And so that is a trend that's really coming up. In fact, when I was doing my holiday deliveries and visiting past clients, we had clients that did this, a couple of clients that did this last year, and their parents sold their house locally. They sold their house locally, and then they built a new house, and a portion of the house, one quadrant of the house had wider doorways, had the electrical switches down lower so that they were wheelchair accessible. And then that way the grandparents were able to live in that section of the house and the kids on the other side, but yet both feel like they still have their separate space.
They must get along very well.
Yes, exactly. It's not a fit for everybody, but trend-wise, we've seen this in other countries, and we're actually kind of seeing a resurgence of that here in the U.S. building market. So we're starting to see that more often, and it's really, there are some awesome, awesome home plans out there that make this happen. If anybody's considering doing that, we have some great builders that have already formulated some plans to take advantage of this, and also some great examples that we could show people. So that's one of the big ones. Number five that they wrote down, that is a little more applicable in the national markets than it is ours, but one of the trends that we're probably going to see is some profit taking from what we call small scale investors. So in these markets, some of the big markets, Phoenix, Las Vegas, some of the markets that had big crashes, during that crash, one out of every five homes that was being bought by an investor because in their minds, for the people that had cash, everything was on sale. Mm-hmm. And so they bought during the sale. Well, you'll start to see some of those come back on the market as they go and look to take some of the profits that have done that. So we might see, you know, some additional inventory again back in some of those markets. Now, Tom, this next one is kind of a crazy prediction, and it might make your skin just kind of crawl up a little bit. But one of the predictions that they're saying that could very well happen is the return of the subprime mortgages market. It's crazy to look at that, but one of the things that they're finding is that most buyers, having been through this education and stuff, will remain pretty disciplined. But what will happen as those mortgages start to more purchases are done, less refinances are done, as banks look on the private market to try to capture some of that lost business, they're predicting that we might see some segments of the market take a little more risk approach in their lending.
You know, it's funny you say that. I have a mentor that I've known for years, and I was actually just talking to him, and he's affiliated with his company that is expanding their subprime inventory of products. And
right.
Literally just 2 weeks ago we had this conversation.
Okay, well, we're not too far off the mark here, are we?
He started the conversation with subprime is back.
So I think we will see some options like that happen. You know, I think we've spent the last couple of years tightening down on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That at some point that pendulum is going to swing back to a more normalized structure. And because of that, you are going to see some private options come back out of the private market.
So for our listeners that may be not 100% aware with what subprime is, basically if you come to me right now, you get a loan from me, you're going to get basically an A paper loan. You have to qualify for it. We're going to verify all your income, your assets, your credit. You have to qualify and meet A paper guidelines. Now, subprime is someone who just doesn't fit in those guidelines for one reason or another. What I do miss, Lance, is stated income for self-employed borrowers.
Right.
Because it makes sense. I have clients that are extremely successful business owners, and they have an extremely efficient accountant. And it's like a double-edged sword, really, because your accountant needs to do their job and
right.
get you the deductions you deserve. Now, some of that money, you're not actually spending money, and maybe they get $1 million in sales down to $50,000 in net income when we know that's not really the case. The accountant's doing their job. Well, at the end of the day, I have to use that bottom-line figure. So there's some programs I wish would come back, and stated income is certainly a part of that subprime.
And I think one of the, stated income is a part of that subprime. And I think what happened is they had those stated income loans that definitely had their place. But then what happened is they allowed that program to expand outside of the market. And you had W-2 people that had verifiable income using stated loans.
If you work at Subway, you probably shouldn't have a stated income loan.
Exactly. And so those are some of the stories that we heard, kind of coming out. So the prediction is that we'll start to see some more of those. And so for some borrowers out there, that'll be a great fit. And the last one coming out of there, the last prediction that they had made there is that they actually think in some of these markets that have had major price increases, we've seen markets like Phoenix and Vegas start to return a little bit. After that, we're really going to expect to see the second half of the year, those prices start to level out a little bit, flatline a little bit. We think there'll be some interest rate increases along with some flattening of sales in the second half of the year. So we'll probably see the market take a little bit of a breather the second half of the year. A little different when we look specifically here in Tri-Cities. We did the market update report last week, so we've had increases in both. We will continue to track those month-to-month, report back to you as the listeners, and let you guys know what's going on. But there's some really exciting trends coming out, some great things happening. It's going to be another big year for us in 2014. We look forward to helping you out with your real estate needs, and we just appreciate once again everything during this holiday season that we've been providing and that the listeners have referred to us. As always, we are going to be getting out of here, finishing our Christmas shopping, and then we'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.